Moncrief on News Talk.
Why not give it to Azazel? Just for argument's sake. How was his home? He and the other demons have no place to go, so if giving them the key would free you and Nada, then why not? I'm sure you have a million reasons.
No. Just one. Azazel will never be content to rule hell.
There you go. That's The Sandman. You can stream the first half of season two now on Netflix. James Dempsey's here with us once again. This is a bit aux because this is a Neil Gaiman thing. So it's like totally, he's totally cancelled now.
Yeah,
everything,
he's definitely cancelled. Yeah. And you know, I've read conflicting reports about how this is the final season of Sandman, right? So The Sandman is perhaps one of Neil Gaiman's most famous creations. He is basically the Sandman, the Dreamweaver, Morpheus, etc. He also goes by the name Dream. And the journey from graphic novel to screen has been a very long and checkered thing. Originally, movies were planned for, you know, I think from the late 90s onwards. And then finally it went to TV. There was a bidding war and HBO passed on it because they were looking for too high a budget. It's made by Warner Brothers and it's created by David S. Goyer, who's probably best known for the Dark Knight trilogy, but also for Foundation, which is coming back to Apple TV on Friday, and Neil Gaiman himself. But his involvement in season two has been less. And some reports, said that Netflix had already said season two was going to be the final season before even anything came out, any allegations were made. But I just don't know. But at the same time, it's certainly true that Netflix wanted to build an intellectual property out of this, because there's also its spin-off show, which is Dead Boy Detectives, which ran for only one season and failed to garner much interest. I think it was kind of people liked it, but not enough people liked it, clearly. And this is returning for season two after 2022's season one. Now, season one, I guess, had a harder task of introducing the character of Dream. He's played by Tom Sturridge, who you heard in his sort of monotone, whispery voice there. He is the leader of the realm of dreams, along with the other Endless. They would be Destiny, Destruction, Despair, Delirium, Desire. These all right.
God, that'd be a great wedding, wouldn't it?
but this season finds him back in the full abilities of his powers. He's overseeing the world of dreams and popping up and around history. And this is a real show. Like, the whole point of this is intertextuality, you know, with a capital I, right?
Oh, right.
So it's all about how can we weave sort of classical Greek myths into Shakespearean stories about or Shakespearean plays, and then throw in a bit of fey folk and all that kind of stuff, right? So you have to go into it with an open mind. But because of that, it's kind of a strangely not particularly plot-driven show. Mm. It's a very vibesy kind of show where Tom Sturridge's Dream goes around very monotone. For me, I actually think he's kind of, not to put all the blame on him, but for me, he doesn't quite have the gravitas that this character is supposed to be. I found him incredibly monotone and a little boring. You know, he doesn't give an awful lot of reaction. There's no smiling, there's no quipping, there's no nothing. He is the straightest straight man that anyone has ever seen in a show that has, like, demons eating each other and dragons talking and, you know, Mark Hamill playing a guy named Mervyn Pumpkinhead, right? Mm. So, like, certainly there are definitely shades of, like, absolute silliness and kind of weird, almost like Cronenbergian body horror creep stuff going on as well. But all in, I kind of just don't quite know what this show is, because it's just constantly hopping all over the place in terms of time, in terms of plot, in terms of setting, in terms of everything. And then it's all sort of pulled together by this rather, you know, po-faced, miserable performance by its lead actor. Now, I didn't read any of The Sandman prior to this, and I've been kind of hot and cold on many of Gaiman's different adaptations in the past. I think I just don't particularly get his style, and that's fine, right? I can live with it. But, like, I would imagine those who greenlit this for Netflix are probably very frustrated at the outcome of the various allegations and reports made about Gaiman, but also the fact that they have piled millions and millions and millions of dollars into this. And it's, you know, while finding kind of a niche, more than a niche audience, enough to merit a season two, shall we say, you know, if a streamer is pouring money into a show like this, they want it to be an awards darling and a critical darling.
Yeah.
And this is neither.
Someone says, I read the Sandman comics and listened to the audio drama. I'm now watching the show and I must say they've nailed all of them.
Okay.
Okay. Still have, but I assume... If you turn on series two, would you have to have watched series one to have any idea what's going on?
I think you would need to go back to the very beginning of season one and watch like as intended, right? Because the whole, you know, while the kind of various plots in this in season two are all about what we heard in the clip, there is kind of something going on with the realm of hell and Lucifer and Dream's involvement in that. Then we have this sort of overarching story about a first love he had 10,000 years ago that didn't go his way and didn't go her way. And then a search for destruction, the sort of long lost D-brother of the Endless, and what that means. And the sixth episode, which is half of this season, the rest of it will be released before July is out, is all about leading towards the end of that story arc involving what the Endless do to each other. I can't really go into it because it all involves massive spoilers.
Yeah.
But I will say, plum role for Anne Skelly, Irish actress who plays Nuala. She is one of the Fae folk who, as we get to see, will be doing a lot more in the second half of the season, but was last seen in The Nevers, another show with a dubious creator, that being the one of Buffy and Angel and all those.
Yeah.
I won't go into that either. But
what world is it set in, by the way? Is it some sort of kind of weird magical fantasy world, or is it in Manchester?
I would say it's mostly set in the English-speaking world, right? Yeah. But beyond that, it can be set in contemporary times, but then they'll hop back to 16th century Britain and then ancient Greece, where everyone is speaking with an RP British accent and, you know, probably studied at RADA. It's definitely kind of, let's say, the English-speaking world, but yeah, it traverses timelines all the time.
Right, our second show is called Countdown. No, not that Countdown. You can stream all of season one now on Amazon Prime Video. Here's a clip.
I gotta know you're 100%.
I'm 100%.
One mistake, we are dead.
Well, that's why there won't be any mistakes.
Hey, where'd we meet?
What? Oh, Italian restaurant on the Grand River, downtown Detroit.
Greek place.
Yeah, what'd I say?
Italian.
Oh, Greek-Italian.
There is a large Greek population in Detroit.
There's probably Italians, too.
You know what? That's it. I'm calling it.
Just kidding. Okay? Yes, Greek restaurant. The Golden Fleece. Besides, it's a cover story. Who cares?
I care.
Right. What are they counting down to?
Good question. Right. Yeah. So... this comes from Derek Haas, the prolific writer of Too Fast, Too Furious, and all of the various Chicagos, that is to say Chicago Fire, PD, Med, and Justice, but not Chicago Beef, let's just say, right? And it involves a task force brought together when a Homeland Security agent is shot down, you know, in the middle of LA on a Tuesday morning, and suddenly a case is launched. Now, they're all kind of overseen by Eric Dane, who people best know as kind of Dr. McSteamy from his run on Grey's Anatomy, although he just announced that he actually has motor neuron disease. So,
oh, wow.
I'm sorry to hear about that. But he's FBI agent Nathan Blythe, who gathers together a couple of police officers, one of them played by Jensen Ackles, who we saw in the clip there. He's fresh off, you know, 300 plus episodes of Supernatural and a pretty good run as Soldier Boy on The Boys. Mm. So good, in fact, that he and Aya Cash, who played Stormfront, Stormfront on The Boys, have now got a spin-off in the ever-increasing Boys universe.
Oh,
Boysiverse. we also heard in that clip Jessica Camacho as Amber Oliveira. She's a DEA agent. There's a FBI hacker one. There's a big bulky other LAPD one. And anyway, they're all brought together and they're told to investigate this. And of course, it reveal their investigations discover that there is a murky underworld that may involve rehash some nuclear proliferation, but a dirty bomb in the middle of LA. So okay, they are investigating. Right. Ultimately, that's the overarching arc of the whole series. Now, because this is made for streaming and there are no ad breaks, right? It isn't just kind of build up, break, etc. Yeah. It has a bit more heft to it than that. But this is a very old-fashioned, and by old-fashioned I mean like 90s to the early 2000s police procedural in right. the kind of CSI type vein. Right? Yeah. Now there is like there's this overarching investigation, and the characters themselves have various different issues that need to be explored in their personal lives. But all in, it's the kind of show that most of it is just people explaining exactly what's going on 90% of the time that you're watching it, as in somebody will say something and they'll say, do you mean this? And you're like, yeah, we were actually following that already. And then some like very heavy-handed rock music will appear as soon as any of the action sequences start. And they are the typical police sort of action sequences you could expect. You know, a punch here, a car chase there, a shootout, a dead person left, right and centre. Right? Okay. Now, I will say I was surprised by how much I didn't dislike this, right? Now, I'm not going so far as to say I liked it.
Okay.
But like, I just thought this was going to be absolute and utter trash. But it was kind of pleasantly trash in its own right. Like, as in, don't get me wrong, am I going to go the distance of the 13-hour-long episodes to get to the end of finding out if LA goes down in a dirty bomb? Probably not. But there are some times where, you know, you just put something on in the background and let it play for 3 or 4 episodes and suddenly you find yourself at the end of a season. And for me, this would be that kind of show. Now, just because it's not the kind of show that necessarily appeals to me doesn't mean there aren't many people out there. It has been number 2 worldwide for Amazon for the 2 weeks since it's been out. And that is not saying nothing in this day and age,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Also, like, it's a very sort of like, it's not a challenging show, right?
Yeah.
As in, like, some, you know, not everything needs to be The Bear, right? Not everything needs to be, I don't know, some of the other challenges.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
As in, like, sometimes you just want mindless, silly, entertaining nonsense. And, you know, I think Jensen Ackles is a character actor who has lived that for season after season after season of serialized, silly action kind of shows. So he is a pro with this kind of stuff. If you like him, I think you'll find a lot to like in this kind of show.
Okay. A lot of the time these shows kind of work, I don't, just due to the tone more than anything else, rather than doing anything particularly original.
Yeah.
Does this ever have a light moment? Does it kind of sometimes wink at the audience or that kind of thing?
Oh, this is so tongue-in-cheek throughout the whole thing.
All right,
right?
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
it doesn't take itself too seriously at all. You know, on the scale of like 24 to Homeland, which is sort of where I was ranking it, it's sort of like 12.
Yeah.
Let's say, rather than Homeland, right? It's like really kind of definitely tongue-in-cheek, and its cast knows that. There are a lot of jokes throughout the whole thing.
Okay, well, that's always the thing
that
lightens
it up a lot, you know.
Yeah, whereas Homeland, oh my God, Jesus. Right, okay, our third show is, could be one of the longest titles James ever chosen. America's Sweethearts, Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders. You can stream all of season 2 now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
The way these pictures are ordered is how everyone scored at finals with the 15 judges, and then we give you a vote each night as well. So as you can see, you are here. You're not gonna make the team this year.
No! right, so it does what it says in the tin?
Yes and no, right? Like, it's a very, it's actually a very well-made, the best possible version of this show. And I say that with kind of evidence to back me up, because there was another show called Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders Making the Team, which ran from 2006 to 2021, which was basically the same thing, but like not as nicely put together, right?
Okay.
So this follows, obviously, the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, who are the premier cheerleading, professional cheerleading squad of the United States. It's created by Greg Whiteley, who made Cheer, which was a documentary series about this kind of like about college aged cheerleaders in Corpus Christi, I think it was, also in Texas, I guess. And then Last Chance U, which would also be quite well known. And it features the same people as were in the previously mentioned Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders show. That is to say, Kelly Finglas, their director, Judy Trammell, the choreographer, and Charlotte Jones Anderson, the brand officer and vice president of the whole thing, as well as all of the dancers. But what's very interesting, or kind of equally tragic, about the squad is that you're not guaranteed your spot. As in, if you get your spot, you have to re-audition the following year to get back on your spot.
Oh, and God.
This is about young women, female dancers in the US, who are interested in taking part in, you know, not the biggest, well, one of the biggest stage for contemporary dance in the United States, as in the Dallas Cowboys are worth $11 billion as a brand. And yet prior to this year, when a renegotiation happened, which is a major focal point of the second season of the show, where they're trying to argue for a wage increase, the cheerleaders were earning about $22,000 a year and working other jobs on top of that. Whereas the Waterboys, and forgive me, the only context I have for Waterboys is the Adam Sandler movie from circa 1999. So I actually don't quite know what they do, so I don't want to completely damn them. But they were earning $52,000 a year for you know, hauling water around instead. So it shows the brutality of the constant effort to be a one of these America's sweethearts.
Mm. And it doesn't explain why they do it.
Because it's a platform for people who want it, for women who want to dance. You know, there are limited options, you know, that you can, if you train as a dancer your whole childhood and teenage years, there's only so many stages for you to go on. And this would be considered one of the biggest ones, which is how they were able to get away with paying them next to nothing for so long, because they got to say, you know, you came here for, this is a vocation. This is more than just a job. This is like a Dallas Cowboys cowgirl or whatever, cheerleader. So all in, it's a really fascinating look at like a number of very interesting societal things, injuries, mental health problems, eating disorders, how they rank the women, how they treat them as at times cold. I mean, really cold. Like what we heard in the clip there is a woman basically being shown her photograph at the very bottom of the list and being told, well, you're gone.
God,
now. Was it quite necessary? I don't think so.
Yeah.
you could have sent her out with a nice try harder next time or whatever, right? But like it's a very, very frank and interesting look, and has become incredibly popular, so much so that I guess it was harder to say no to the cheerleaders when they were campaigning for a pay rise this time around, and they were very successful. They got a 400% pay rise, so they, you know, so the show has done them a lot of good.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And bad.
Yeah.
At the same time.
How many episodes are in this?
Oh, it's about 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Crikey. That's a lot of cheerleading to go on. And they do other things while they're doing this.
Yeah. And part of the way their wages are bolstered are with different sponsorships as well. But there are very tight rules about what they are allowed to do and what they aren't allowed to do, how much weight they're allowed to gain, how much they're allowed to use or lose, how they can style their hair, their makeup, all that kind of stuff. But as they would say, that's the brand. And if you want in, that's what you got to do.
Those three shows are The Sandman. You can stream the first half of season two now on Netflix. Countdown. You can stream all of season one on Amazon Prime Video. And America's Sweethearts, Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders. You can stream all of season two now on Netflix. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.